Accession number 29065, Mr. Michael White, Reel 2. Now, after the war had finished, a year or so later, you left school. We've already got that far in that side of things. Now, you were going to go into printing. Tell us about your work in the printing industry. What job did you take up?
When I first went for an interview at a firm called Staples Press, as it was called in those days, it was part of a large London publishing company who had firms dotted around in St Albans and Rochester's and places like in London. I started work actually in the binding department, where they used to do all the machinery, where they had folding machines and all things like that. And then
what as started work as a what?
Well, I just started work as a lad. I started work as a lad, and then kind
as
of
an
like
apprentice.
No, I started work in the binding, and then kind of like then I was then kind of offered apprenticeship in the mechanical composition. This is where in printing you've got this all the in those days all the type, it was called letterpress, and all the type was made with these mechanical composition linotypes and monotypes and all things like that. So I was then apprenticed in the mechanical composition.
Now, did you enjoy the work? Tell us a bit about the work as an apprentice, you know.
I enjoyed it very much indeed, sort of thing. And I suppose perhaps because also I suppose the education helped a bit, because I mean you had to have a knowledge of kind of all the punctuations, you know, had to know what a comma and a full stops and all these others, and especially the spellings and things like that. And of course there's all the typefaces, type sizes and things like that, and it was very involved. Print in those days was more or less a continuation, I suppose, from Caxton's period. It went through gradually, and as such, within the printing trade, you had to be an apprentice, and then you could get a job anywhere as such, and so you could go anywhere, whether you went to Canada, to Australia, to and things like that. And so when it was in those early period of when I was first started, it was in the binding department. There was two young lads, I suppose they were perhaps a couple of years older than myself. They was in the army cadets, and they used to talk about all these different things. And so this other friend of mine, who we started work in the print about the same time, we'd actually been to the same school together, believe it or not. And so they invited us to go down to the what were called the local drill hall at that time. And this was the period when the local grammar schools stopped being the combined cadet force, because this was about nearly 4 or 5 years after the World War II had finished. And so the army cadets and the combined cadet force combined. And but this was what I call an infantry. It was kind of like a company of the Northamptonshire Regiment, which is infantry as such. And so this is the period I actually joined the actual cadets.
Now, which drill hall was it? Do you know the name of the drill
yes,
hall?
Yes, it was the Kettering. We went to the Kettering drill hall. At that time, it was used by the Territorial Army and also the Army Cadet Force.
Now, what happened when you first went to join them? I mean, how did they take you in? You know, you arrived at the drill hall. How did they sign you up?
Well, the two lads kind of work with kind of they're much older than myself. I mean, they both had stripes. I think they were both corporals and things like that. And one of them actually finished up as the sergeant major, and then I think he became an officer as such. But so really, we was because we actually knew them. We had all great help from them, things like that. And so really, over the next 4 years, I had four happy years in the cadets.
Really. What uniform were you issued with?
It was the old khaki battle dress, and we had the Northamptonshire Regiment badge. And whilst we were there, I went to I think about four camps as such under canvas.
So once you've been issued, what happened before we go into camps? What happened when you were on your normal training with them? Take us through the training you got with them. Would it be called a drill? But anyway, the night you went into Kettering Drill Hall.
Well, we was actually introduced as such, and of course there was other cadets joining as well. And so eventually we went through the normal training procedure, I suppose, of all kind of cadets or infantry kind of companies. And that we actually did the what we call the foot drill, which is marching up and down, about turn, left turn, right turns, and that. And then
how did you take to drill? I mean, because some people find it easy, others have.
I took to drill very easy, sort of thing, and things like that. And then we actually moved on to kind of like the rifle drill, where it's all slope arms, order arms, and all the other bits and pieces and things like that.
Did you see the point? You're only a young lad. I mean, when did you join? 46? When you were 14?
I think I was about 14 years of age. I was as such. And also the other excitement really of it, as a 14-year-old, locally we've got two big open ranges. And of course, on a Sunday morning, we used to be picked up by these Bedford 3-tonner trucks, sort of thing, and taken to these ranges. And the first one was firing the 303 rifle. And I suppose in those days, the 303 rifle was quite heavy for us. And of course, we were only quite small. And of course, the thing was that they always said, kind of, when the rifle fires, it kicks back, sort of thing, and you get this big bruise in your shoulder. And I always remember we folded our handkerchiefs and put it under our tunic to fire the rifle and things like that. Because we'd actually been trained with the cadets before we actually fired the rifles and things like that. And then later on, we went to a place called Sywell Range. This is where we went quite often. And then later on, we went to another range. I think it's called Grendon. And this is where we first fired the Bren gun.
How did you do when you first fired the rifle?
Well, they were the actual ranger sites. So they had these targets where they used to people take it in turns. Some used to go into the targets and used to haul and lower these things. And then when you fired the actual rifle at the target, where it went in this target, or if it missed it, they used to have these pointers. And then it kind of gives you kind of like inner or outer or bull or things like that.
And the same. How did you do?
Well, I did quite well, because also actually in the drill hall itself, it actually had an indoor 2-2 range as such. And of course, we was also firing the 2-2, which is so many yards. I can't forget how far it was in those days and that. And so it was all part of the excitement as such. And then, also the actual training, we also did map readings and all things like that. And of course, years to come, as I actually joined the real army as such, I was very grateful for my training as map reading.
Now, what form did the map reading training take? I mean, how far did it go into it with the army cadets?
Well, we use these ordnance survey maps and things like that. An ordnance survey map, say, around, say, the Kettering areas and things like that, it was very easy, because you've got the town's march, you've got the crossroads, you've got church with a tower, church with a spire, and you've got all these spot heights and things like that. And then you actually moved on to all the contour lines, and then you've got all the compasses, and then you've got the protractors with the bearings and back bearings and things like that. We went into quite depth, we did, and because I went on one or two map reading courses over those 4 years. And of course, as you kind of, you had to go into these different tests as things moved on, and you started off and you got what I call a half of a red star. It's part one, I think it was called. And then you went into part two. And then once you got your part two, you could then be promoted to a stripe, a lance corporal, and things like that. And so this is how it moved on. And I eventually finished up as a full corporal. But also...
Did the ranks make much difference in reality, you know, as you got ranks in the Army Cadets?
No, it was quite happy-go-lucky. But, I mean, when was doing this rifle drill and things like that, it was taken quite seriously and things like that. You know, it was lots of yelling and shouting and marching up and down and things like that. And then...
What about other training? What about the Bren gun training? How far did you go with the Bren gun, or was it...
Well, when the Bren gun sort of thing, my Bren gun training was much more in depth than it ever was when I joined the army.
Now tell us about it. How did they take you through it then?
Well, I mean, you actually did the, you know, lighting, you know, going down on the prone position, loading and cocking in, things like that, and all the different things. And then there was also changing the barrel and things like that. And then afterwards, it was kind of taking the Bren gun to pieces, because I'm talking over a period, taking the Bren gun to pieces and things like that. And we even went down to the minute things of taking the trigger mechanism to pieces, which I never ever saw in the army, never. And the amazing thing really was that the actual Bren guns that we had in the army cadets were much more modern than we actually had when we went to Korea. In fact, the Bren guns we had in the cadets, it had what they call this leaf sight, where you used to flick up and used to turn the bits and pieces up, where in the, when we went to Korea, these are the old, mostly the World War II ones, which had what they call a drum sight, and it used to, a round thing, it used to just click, you know, kind of just add in and things like that.
Now, what was it like to fire the Bren gun?
Oh, it's marvellous. It was really exciting because with the Bren gun, with difference to the 303 rifle, where kind of the rifle has kind of just a solid wooden stock, with the Bren gun, it's got a spring in its butt. And so it just goes forward and back. Well, it goes forward. You don't notice it, really. It goes forward and back. And, of course, you fire single shots and then you fire the bursts and things like that. And it was exciting for someone who's only 14, 15 and things like that.
Now, any other? Did you do any bayonet training?
No. We never touched bayonets.
No hand grenades.
No grenades.
So
no.
It was really just rifle and Bren, was it? Yes. Any other weapons?
It was mostly, well, they had the Sten guns and things
like
that.
Tell us about that. Well, that's a dangerous weapon, though.
Well, the Sten guns, they didn't bother too much about those, sort of thing. But I never ever fired a Sten gun in the cadets, and I never fired a Sten gun in training. In the Royal Artillery, it was not until I went to Korea when I first fired the Sten guns and things like that. And of course, it was the time I was amazed, really, firing the Sten gun from the hip.
We'll come to that. Now, so I've got that seems any other training you do. What was your drill like? Was it just one night a week, or was it weekends?
No, I'm sure it was at least two nights a week and things like that. And then, of course, you then had weekends. We used to go on.
What did you do at weekend training?
On some of these weekends, there was one of the weekend camps. We went to Newark in Nottinghamshire, and we went to this for a long weekend, and we went with the Royal Engineers. And I always remember we went to because we were taught how to do all these different knots and bits and pieces, which I'd never been in the Scouts or the Cubs, and so that was quite interesting. But then we built a Bailey Bridge. Now, this is the Bailey Bridge, which goes over the water, and you have to do it in section. Of course, we were only little lads and things like that, and we have this big stretch of like a huge, great big pond, I suppose, as larger than that lawn at the back here. And we actually built this Bailey Bridge, and then when we'd more or less kind of finished sort of thing, we all had to take it all to pieces again and things like that. But it took in other things as well, which is, you know, because it's a long time, it's a job to remember that one. And another one was we went to the big, because at Northampton, which is the county, is the county town as such, they had the home of the Northamptonshire Regiment. They had one or two big, I think it's Talavera barracks and other barracks. And I remember going there for a long weekend, and they had all us little cadets on this huge, great big square. And they're having us giving orders, marching up and down. Of course, these little cadets with these little squeaky voices, you know, kind of yelling out and things like that. With this sergeant major, huge big sergeant major, as he seemed in those days. But it was all exciting, it was. And then also on top of that, there were the annual camps.
Now, tell us about the annual camps.
Now, I can't think either about three or four. I went to Crowborough in Sussex. And of course, whilst we were there, we were doing different, you know, different trainings and different things like that.
Was it a mass camp, or was it more than one army cadet?
It was all come from. I think they came from different parts, and it was all in these bell tents. These are the old bell tents, I suppose, from pre-war, and I suppose what they had in World War One. And if I remember rightly, the pole was in the centre, and the theory was that you could get so many people around this pole, but with the cadets, it was feet to the pole as you went round. And then you did different trainings. They took you out different places and things like that. You had different demonstrations.
Now, did you do any tactical training? This is how to attack, defend, you know, moving in formation.
No, we didn't do that. And we went to... I remember going to twice to Colchester. Now, Colchester was, I suppose, to many of the young soldiers, was one of the horror places, Colchester, Catterick, and I suppose Aldershot. But we went to Colchester. And it's also in tented camps. And I suppose the regular soldiers, I suppose they did all the cooking and what have you. It was all open cooking, what I remember of it. And I remember we had a demonstration by the Royal Artillery. There was a unit based in Colchester, and it was part of the 4-5 field. And the vehicles came along towing these 25 pounder with a limber at the back. It was what they call a quad, used to pull them. And I think about four of these quads, you know, with these guns came along. They put them all into operation sort of thing, and then they fired the blanks and things like that. And it was amazing, really, that this troop who gave this demonstration when I was perhaps only maybe 15, 16 years old sort of thing, they actually went to Korea, and I actually met a person, and he actually finished up as the chairman of the British Korean Veterans Association. He stepped in the Royal Artillery for about 30 odd years, I believe, and he said it was his troop that actually, he remembers that it came a demonstration to the cadets. And so these things do link up as such. But I did have four happy years with the cadets, and I finished up as corporal. And I do remember another long weekend, we went to London, and we stayed, I forget where it was, and then kind of we all went to, it was going to see the changing of the guard at Buckingham Palace. And all us cadets, we all formed up, and we formed up behind the band or the guard of the one of the guards' band, I forget which it was, and we all marched through the gates of Buckingham Palace. We did, and we got this Northamptonshire badge. And I always remember there was a cry from someone at the gates. He must have been an old soldier from the Northamptonshire Regiment, I suppose, of World War II. And he says, "Up the Steelbacks," and I always remember that one. And so we marched through, following behind the guards, or the guards who were changing the guard and the band, and we all lined up at the side of Buckingham Palace, inside the main gates, and there was a contingent from South Africa. These are all blacks, you know, coloured from, I suppose, the West African Rifles, or one of those kind of names. We lined up there whilst they did the changing of the guard, and then we had more or less quite an exciting time in London, had a photograph taken all round Trafalgar Square. But this was all paid for through the cadet force and things like that. And one of the reasons I actually went in the cadets also is perhaps because my elder brother, who was 6 years older than myself, he at that time, because all the young lads at that time, they either went in the Cubs, the Scouts, the Army Cadets, Sea Cadets, the Air Cadets, and my brother with his friend, they joined the local Air Cadets. And I used to help him with his aircraft spotting, and also his Morse code, and also I used to help him with his mathematics, because, you know, they used to do mathematics as that. And so that he had his, I think he was in the Air Cadets for about 3 years. So when he was actually called up at the age of 18, he took it for granted he was going into the Air Force. And because the war was more or less coming to an end, they did not want anyone in the Air Force. What they wanted lots of soldiers, infantry soldiers, because the British Army, after the war had more or less finished or was finishing, it was all dotted all around Europe and the Far East and everywhere, and so they wanted infantry soldiers. And so he was most upset. He wanted to be an air crew, and he finished up in the as a private in the Northamptonshire Regiment, and he was that. And so I was actually in the cadets, and he was actually in the full-time and things like that. And although we both had the Northamptonshire Regiment badge, and when he actually came to, he did about 3 years, and he was just finishing his training somewhere on the Norfolk, I think at Sheringham, and when the war had actually finished. And because he'd actually been in for about 14 days before the war finished, he got either a medal, either one medal or two medals, which was a standing joke really between us. And like I say, then afterwards, he then went into Europe, and he used to send me all these. He went to Greece and Italy and Yugoslavia, he went to Trieste and that, and he used to send me all these foreign notes back, you know, with lots and lots of noughts on, lots of souvenirs. And one of his friends he was with, He worked in an engineering firm, and so he used to kind of this chrome, and so his Northamptonshire badge, he used to chrome it because being in the regular army, they used to have to clean their badge both back and front, and he had this beautiful chrome badge at the back. And so when he actually left, he sent it to me in the post, and so as a cadet sort of thing, I had this beautiful Northamptonshire badge with a chrome back.
Now, tell me about your call-up, because there's quite a story about... I mean, you're 18 in, what, 1950? What is the whole procedure of the call-up and how you ended up in the Royal Artillery? Because that's not what was meant to happen at all, as far as you were concerned, I know that.
No.
Tell us, take us right through, how, right from when you realised you were going to be called up.
Yeah. Well, being in the cadets... We knew that more or less month by month, different cadets were actually leaving to go into the forces. And so that it was no surprise that when on kind of like for my 18th birthday as such, this brown envelope came through the door, which more or less said, you will report or else, which meant that kind of if you did not report, the police could come knocking on the door to pick you up. That was the theory anyway. And being an apprentice, I had the option of either staying, going in at 18, or I could stay in till I was 21 to finish my apprenticeship. Now, I think that in the firm, because it was quite a large printing firm, I think there were about five or six lads. We were all about a similar age. And I think the actual theory was that if you went in when you was 18, you was on small money, apprenticeship money. And when you came back at the age of 20, you still had time to kind of to pick up and kind of continue your apprenticeship and get back to normal, rather than kind of if you waited till you was the age of 21, your apprenticeship would then be finished and your contract with the firm theoretically had finished and they need not employ you as such. That was the actual theory. So all the lads at that time, we all decided that we would go when we was 18 years of age. And so this envelope came through the door sort of thing. And then I had, then had to report to, I think it was the drill hall or a school in Northampton. I think it was a place called Clare Street. And then you had a medical with a medical officer sort of thing, different things. And of course, I was fit. You know,
kind now, how strict a medical was it? You may not remember it, but I mean, was it a proper medical?
Well, it was just a general thing. They went through your ears, your nose, and all the bits and pieces. I think you had to drop your trousers and all things like that. But, I mean, I knew more or less what was likely to happen, so it was no great shock to me as such. And I was just quite happy to go, sir. And so we
now,
then
what
had...
did you want to join? Because you didn't want to be in the infantry, despite being there. You know, what did you... can you explain what you wanted?
No. You say, after the actual medical, I think you then had some form of, like, a test, if I remember rightly, you know, kind of that. And then kind of you
so
then...
what was that test?
Well, I think it was to try to see, like, your mathematical ability or your kind of your mechanical ability. And then kind of you were then interviewed by an officer to see kind of what you was interested in. Now at that time I believe that kind of what they wanted was lots and lots of infantry soldiers. So if so most of the people actually did finish up in the infantry, but if you've got some sort of mechanical background, we'll say like a person who worked in a garage, he would more likely be guided to say like the into the cavalry regiments, you know, with tanks or kind of vehicles and things like that, like the Remy. And people with electrical knowledge would go to, they'd be guided to the Royal Signals. But in my instance, because I'd been in a cadet, and like with all the young lads of that time, they all wanted to learn to drive, because most of the lads, I mean, they're lucky if they had a push bike. So they all...
No, you couldn't drive.
Oh, no. No, all I had, like most of the lads, was a push bike. I think there was maybe an odd one, perhaps had an old motorbike. So when I was interviewed by the officer, he asked me what I wanted to be, and of course I said I wanted to go into the Royal Army Service Corps because I was an army cadet sort of thing, and we more or less had a choice. And but he said you kind of like the, what they wanted this service corps, they wanted people who wanted to sign on for 5 years, you know, kind of a long term engagement. And he said, well, as you're an apprentice, he says, why not go into the Remy as such? And I was not kind of too keen on that. And he said, well, why not the Royal Artillery? Because they use vehicles to tow their guns as such. And so I had, as I mentioned, I'd had this demonstration of the gunners in when I was in the cadets at Colchester on the annual camp. And so I was quite happy to go into the Royal Artillery. And so you then went back home as such, and then you kind of waited, you know, you just continued your kind of the job you was doing in print as such. And then waited until the formal letter came, which said that I was to report to... what was it, Park Hall Camp in Oswestry in Shropshire to the Royal Artillery. And then, because this course, I think I then had a train ticket to get there, but from Kettering you had to go across country in the 1950, which was quite a complicated journey. And as I went down to the Kettering station, I'd got no fears of going in the army. And I met two other fellas also going to the same place. And so we went from Kettering Station on a complicated journey. We went to Market Harbour, which is about 9 miles up the road. We had to change trains there, and we went to Rugby. And then we had to change trains there to Birmingham. And at Birmingham, we had to change stations at Birmingham. And then we went on the final leg to more or less, I think, a place called Gaboin, which is more or less the Oswestry, the stopping point for the Oswestry camp as such. And so when we alighted there, I mean, the train was actually full of potential recruits like myself, sort of thing, all in like civvy clothes. And so when we alighted from the train, there was all these 3-tonner trucks there and all these people yelling and shouting and things like that. And so we boarded these trucks, and we were taken to the Park Hall camp, the Royal Artillery training camp, which is for the first 2 weeks of your training.
Now, did the unit have a name? Was it a training regiment? I know you go on to...
Yes, it was the... I think it was 89. I mean, I may be wrong. I think it's 89 training regiment. But this is a training regiment purely to kit you out, give you all the inoculations.
You were only there for a couple of weeks.
Two weeks, yeah, yeah.
Now, what was the reception? You know, when you got to the camp, you arrive. I know you'd done all this army cadet, but you were still a civilian.
Oh,
what's
yeah.
What's the sort of... What's it like as you go through the gates?
As I mentioned on my memoirs, it was a shock to the system. Now, I was been in the Army Cadets for 4 years. I knew how to blanco belts. I knew how to clean boots. I knew how to polish things. And I knew how to slope arms and fire the Bren gun and the rifle and all the bits I knew about map read and things like that. But it was a shock to the system, because I think the whole method of the National Service in those days was because to knock the cockiness out of all people, because... when you had to arrive to these camps, they came from all directions, from Scotland, from Cornwall, from London, and you've got the wide boys, you've got the clever boys, and you've got the people who have been mummy's boys and all things like that. You've got quite a mixture from right to scale from the university students right down to the barrow boy type person. So you've got all types. And so their method really was to kind of to shake anything out of you, which would any cockiness and things like that. So it was from then onwards for the next 2 weeks, it's all yelling and shouting and things like that. But it, and of course, then they take you to the camp, and the first thing I think you have to sign the necessary documentation, as I remember. Then you go to this storeroom where they throw this, ask you what size shoes you wear or things like that, and blah blah blah, and they kind of throw this thing at you more or less like that.
You know what kit you got at that stage?
Oh, you had most of it. You had the blueberry. You had two blueberries. You had the with the badges, and then you had the a vest. I think it was a green one. It was a coloured vest, if I remember rightly, like because it was used as a PT vest as well. You had the vest, and I think you had a pullover, and then you had the battle dress trousers. You had the battle dress, the top, and then you had the belt, and you had the gaiters, and then you had the boots, and then you had the socks, or maybe a couple of pairs of socks, and all things like that. Then you had to sign for everything, because the idea was if you lost it, you paid for it, and things like that. And so then you were then guided to these barrack blocks. I think they were called what are they called, spiders. These were these wooden kind of buildings where they kind of all joined together.
Well, like huts,
like a, yeah, huts, built. wooden huts sort of thing, things like that. And down the either side of these rooms would be so many beds. I can't remember how many it would be. I mean, so many down.
Were they single bunk beds? Single beds?
Oh, yeah, they were, I think they were spring beds, if I remember right, the iron beds. And then down about three parts of the room, there would be one of these iron stoves sort of thing, you know, kind of for the heating and things like that.
Now, this was August, so that presumably...
Yeah, this is August the 24th, 1950.